You're listening to the Fezcast, produced on behalf of the Saracen Supporters Association and featuring the independent thoughts, rants and rambles of Saracens fans and special guests. If you'd like your opinion to be heard on the show, you can find the Fezcast on Facebook or Fezcast_SSA on Instagram and whatever Twitter is known as these days. But for now, enjoy this week's show.
You're listening to the Fezcast.
Well, hello everybody and welcome to episode 31 of the Fezcast, and it's me and Matt tonight, or today, or whatever, this morning when it goes out. We're recording this Bank Holiday Monday, April Fool's Day. I suppose we could do an April Fool's Day joke, but then it'll be pointless because it's going out on Wednesday, isn't it, Matt? But how you doing, buddy, anyway? All good?
Yeah, not too bad. Yeah, it's Monday morning, Easter weekend, so I think both of us have lost track of what day of the week it is, what time it is and everything. But yeah, we've got a couple of days for this to go out. So. All good.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we're still entitled to be on the Amaretto by now, aren't we? It's a bit like Christmas, isn't it? But there we go. Yeah, quite a bit to chat about, really. I mean, obviously, Friday night against Saints after the Lord Mayor's Parade. We'll have a chat about that. Great result for Ampthill, featuring 10 Saracens youngsters we need to chat about. You've got an interview with Ines Marie Venter from Saracens Mavericks, and obviously Women's Six Nations, Matt, so plenty to get through. Perhaps we'd best start with the game against Saints on Friday night, and I'll start off the debate, see where you go with this, but I mean, a lot of woe is me out there from the Saracens fans, and I don't know whether there's a level of expectation that is a little bit daft these days. As we've seen from all of the results this weekend, anybody, and I mean anybody, because I mean Newcastle ran Leicester pretty close, anybody at home can beat the away team. And we shouldn't be going to the league leaders, regardless of the fact that they had a bad result the week before. In fact, it should be because of the fact they had a bad result the week before. We should never have gone to Northampton Saints expecting to win that match.
To be honest, I think you mentioned that there is a little bit of a sense of entitlement, and you're exactly right. We've spoken about it before. As soon as we lose a game and we don't perform particularly well, all of a sudden it's the end of the world and players need to leave and this, that and the other, which is a bit silly. But I think the fact that we have had quite a lot of success over the past decade or so means that we do, I'd say it's a confidence rather than an arrogance, that we can win every single match, and that's absolutely fine. But yeah, totally agree with you. This season, going to Franklin's Gardens is probably the toughest fixture of the season. We didn't win. But like you said, it's the tightest league season for a long, long time. I think everyone from second to eighth has got exactly the same win and loss record. Played 14, won 8, lost 6, I think it is, across all of them. And it's only Saints that are clear of the rest. And that's only because they beat us. So yeah, it's really tight. We're not going to win every game. It's going to be a huge battle to the end of the season to finish in the top four. We got a very crucial bonus point out of it. It's a tough loss to take. We don't like losing, but yeah, we did go to Franklin Gardens and at least do something.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing, I suppose, is Mark McCall's comments afterwards. I mean, Smalley was actually quite critical of some players, saying that they hadn't effectively pulled their weight. And that's the first time in a long time that I can remember any of the coaching staff being that openly critical. Whether that's a shot across the bows to say, look, you know, there's only, what, four games left. We can't slip up again and just, you know, bringing out the big stick, which hasn't often needed to happen in the last 10, 15 years. It's an interesting one, isn't it, that comment?
It is, but I think it was done in the right way. I think I can get exactly where he's coming from, and the way a lot of our players will react to that, it is a sign, quite rightly, that every single position in that squad is up for grabs, and there is always someone knocking on the door for your spot. So if you're not performing 100%, you might get rotated out a little bit. And you know, I don't think that necessarily anyone was obviously performing badly. I just think all round it just wasn't quite there. I mean, it was very uncharacteristic missed tackle from Jamie George for the first one, I'd say. But I think other than that, he had a pretty decent game, really. Although Theo Dan came on and did bring a lot of energy. So, yeah, it's a tricky one, really. I don't think we should always be uncritical of players. I think there is a reason to say, as Mark McCall said, and like you said, he doesn't do it very often. It would have been very calculated and hopefully, probably, very well received within the squad in a way anyway.
Well, absolutely. I think all he is saying is basically what would have ever been said behind closed doors. And you know, he's felt it's the right thing to come public with it. Now, what I will say from the game is the game was very much a lot of ifs, buts and maybes. And I don't think that actually, as you've alluded to, we played that badly. There was just a couple of occasions where things didn't stick that in other games would have done and would have seen tries. The Nick Tompkins one is the one that really sticks in mind. But as they said in commentary, and I mean, Austin Healey, I'm going to say something here, which is quite weird. Austin Healey impresses me more and more every time I hear him in commentary, actually. I think he's turned into a really, really good commentator. You've got to give credit to Northampton Saints, who clearly watched what Saracens did the week before against Quins and works upon that. And all credit to Phil Dowson and his team at Saints. They are an extreme, for a young coaching team as well. Don't forget, they're a very young coaching team. They've got their head screwed on right, and they're going in very much in the right direction. And, you know, all credit to them. They saw what Saracens had done to Quins the week before, and they put it into practice brilliantly.
Yeah. I mean, their defence was absolutely outstanding. For 75 minutes, they'd have nilled us if it wasn't for two charge downs. You can't necessarily say that was Saracens playing badly, because we had plenty of ball in their half and inside their 22. So it's not necessarily down to us playing badly. You have just you've got to hold your hand up and go, the opposition were better than us on the day. Yeah, there were a couple of things that didn't go our way. There were probably a couple of things that didn't go their way either. But, yeah, you know, we stayed in a game that we were second best in for the vast majority of it, which is encouraging, because when you come into knockout rugby, you can win playing second best and you can win something big playing second best. So that is okay.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, there were some really, really good moments in Saracens. Billy's kick in particular was just, you know, top draw. Whether it was entirely intended, I don't know. But as I've always said, Matt, you know, when I talk about my coaching as, you know, coaching kids or whatever, you want players who are going to do something. And Billy's got the ball in his hands there. He's seen there's nothing other on than a kick. And fair dues to Billy. Billy had a really, really good game on Friday night. I thought he was one of our top performers.
I think it was, yeah. And we have seen kicks from Billy previously. So it's definitely something that he thinks he's got in his locker. But it's definitely nice to see that plot. It wasn't a very big highlights reel for us, but that was definitely in it.
Yeah, and of course the other two highlights were two charge downs before we talk about Alex Lewington exploding into action in the last 2 minutes. But Theo McFarlane's charge down and obviously Ben Earl's charge down. I mean, a lot of that came from as well the fact that the one place there we were able to attack was at the ruck. And that a lot of that came from, and I'm going to have a slight whinge at Luke Pearce. And I know that when we talk to WhatsApp and everything, you think I micro-analyse referees. And to an extent, if I see something, I do pick up on it. And I don't think that Luke had his greatest game, but also I don't think it cost us the game. So we can take that out of it. But what was interesting was he counted down on Tom James once and penalised him. And then told him five. Four. And he must have had the slowest countdown, because I was counting going, well, that's 7 seconds. So he did him once and then let him get away with it for the rest of the game. And that consistency really annoyed me quite a lot. And likewise, Ivan had a couple of moments where he went over the five, but then he sped his game up. And I think because of that, you know, perhaps we lost a little bit of accuracy because he was sped up, because he was playing to what he thought Luke Pearce wanted. Tom James played to it once and then totally ignored it. And, you know, if you're going to do it once, if you're going to draw a line, then you've made a rod for your back. You've got to stick with that. And Luke didn't.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that's actually gone under the radar with a lot of people is this new... it's not a new directive, actually, from World Rugby. It's just a recommendation that actually referees really do start to clamp down on this, having 5 seconds or so to play the ball out from a ruck to speed the game up. It's something that all referees have now been asked to do, which is why you've seen it this weekend, this 5 second countdown be used a little bit more. So it's new to referees as well as the players that they're being asked to do this. So a little bit of understanding, I think, that Luke Pearce almost forgot a couple of times to do it. So yeah, hopefully that does continue, because actually I think it is a good thing to speed the game up and stop the ridiculous caterpillars and things that you get. But yeah, if you're going to do it, it does have to be consistent. And we need I don't know what the solution is. I think you'd get annoyed a little bit if there's a 5 second countdown at every ruck, but it is what it is.
Well, I mean, I always feel it's the same as anything. You know, the responsibility is upon the players, not the referees.
Yep.
If they're continually getting penalised and people say, oh, it's ruining the game, then responsibility is on the players. Play within the laws.
Yeah.
Bang. Done.
If they're strict on it for a long period of time, then eventually they won't even need to do it, because it will just be a natural thing that the ball comes out straight away. So,
yeah. Now, the other thing with the refereeing is, again, you know, and heat at the moment, whatever, you know, Luke Pearce for the second try, was it, asked the wrong question. You know, he clearly thought he saw the ball grounding. I can't see how anybody saw that ball being grounded outside of Luke Pearce. You know, I don't think even the Northampton Saints players thought it was grounded, but they just, you know, do what players do. And he claimed it, thinking, oh, we might get away with this one. That should have been, you know, try yes or no. And then, you know, he can turn around and say, well, I can't, you know. And I think at that point, that really did change momentum in the game. And you know, I can see why he's made the decision he has, but we could rightly feel that one was a little bit of a one that went, you know, that the bits of luck through the season which go with you, that was one that went away against us, wasn't it, Matt?
Absolutely, yeah. And I mean, it's one where I do actually feel a little bit sorry for Luke Pearce, because he's stuck his hand up and given the try in the heat of the moment and said he's happy with the grounding and things. And with them, we're actually checking whether the ball's gone forward in the pass. So yeah. Given that that was what he's looking for, he's asked the right question. You know, do I need to overturn my decision because of the pass? And unfortunately, then we've had a look at the grounding as well. And they've got themselves backed into a corner, because quite rightly, once the try has been given, you have to have absolutely clear evidence that you can turn it over. And we are 95%+ sure that that ball wasn't grounded. But there is not 100% conclusive proof, so you can't overturn it. And like you say, they will go for us, they will go against us. There will be so many tries across the season where there's just a mass of bodies on the ground and the try is either given or it isn't, and you got to stick with what was there, even though no one's got a clue. There'll be loads of them. So, yeah, ultimately, we probably still would have lost that game. If you take that completely in isolation, we'd have had a second bonus point for losing with less than 7. How crucial that could be at the end of the season, don't know. But like you say, there'll be other moments across the season where we got away with one. So you just have to take it on the chin, really.
Well, absolutely. What annoys me, though, with particularly TMO influences, and this is a wider thing, you know, and it follows on from last week with Stefan Luiz taking out Faz with a cheap shot, which wasn't pulled back. And we've had that all this week saying, oh, well, it's because they heard Austin Healey on commentary. But that doesn't matter. That really doesn't matter. You know, we all saw what happened there. And, you know, that should be pulled up and dealt with at that time. We've seen it also in the Bath Quins game yesterday, and the lad being on the sin bin for 25 seconds or something, so it seemed, you know, and Bath quite rightly not happy about that. And I mean, it's about being accurate. These guys now, you know, referees and TMOs are really, really professional and should be professional. And I thought Ian Tempest, who was in the TMO for us, missed an awful lot, particularly the high hit on Juan Martin Gonzalez from, I think, was it Alex Moon, wasn't it? And I mean, yeah, it was unintentional. And we talked about this on our WhatsApp group, but intent doesn't come into it. At the end of the day, hit him. Soft, hard, whatever. Well, hard enough that he had to go off the field eventually. and they never even looked at it. And Ian Tempest has seen exactly. And in real time, I went, well, that's a head hit. That needs to be looked at. And that should have been a yellow card, you know, and it's quite, that's where we could be quite rightly indignant that something obvious like that, particularly when it has such an importance in the game, and people are saying, we need to take head hits out. We need to lower the tackle height. We need to protect players. When something that blatant happens, regardless of how effective that high hit was, they should have gone back to that. And I'm incredulous that they never even looked at that one.
It's tough, isn't it? Because, I mean, I think we've all realised, especially in the last couple of weeks, we don't have a full understanding of exactly how the TMO process works, what they're seeing, what they're looking at all the time. And I do always think when we have an incident at high speed and the game's moved on, the issue that you've got is if a TMO is going to sit and look at an incident for a couple of minutes to try and work out what's happening, that's a couple of minutes where they're not watching the rest of the game. And if another incident happens that they then miss again, we're going to be even more annoyed. So I do understand that they're going to miss stuff because they're, in theory, watching pretty much the same pitches that we are. They've just got the benefit of a couple of extra replays if they spot something initially. So I don't know. Maybe, as with everything in rugby, it would be a lot better if everything was 100% transparent and we knew the process exactly. A bit like the try that was given that shouldn't have been given. We can accept that a wrong decision was made, but hold our hands up as to why, because we know the process. They got the process right, they just got the initial decision wrong. Whereas with the TMO, it's a complete unknown at the moment, so that does need clearing up.
Yeah, absolutely it does. I mean, and yeah, the last thing you want is for us to be spending most of what we're talking about being about the referees, and I'm hoping that we've got the balance right there. Look, the important thing is next game up. When's our next game, Matt? You'll have the fixtures in front of you, no doubt.
That's about 2026, isn't it?
It could well be, couldn't it? Because we've got the European up against Bordeaux Beglers, haven't we?
We have, this weekend coming,
So the really important thing there is, and I think that's possibly why Mark McCall said what he said, is that, you know, this is a game that we're really focusing on. And likewise, when you talk about going to Northampton Saints and, you know, with an expectation of competitiveness, not necessarily victory, again, we've got the same at Bordeaux Beglers, and we've got a big target of increments improvements on that game. Like, we do not want to go there and get stuff like we did last time. We need to make Bordeaux work really, really hard for their expected victory. Because let's not beat about the bush. We don't go there with any sense of expectation whatsoever. European competition, you want home quarterfinals, home semifinals, whatever. And we haven't got that. So, you know, we are the underdogs. And perhaps that will suit us. Sometimes that does suit teams to be the underdogs, to have a little bit. And Saracens in the past have really always, ups their game when they are underdogs. So that's what I'm assuming that, you know, the focus on this game will be, look, you know, we're not expected to win, but let's do a surprise on this one.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, yeah, well, number one is to perform better than we did last time we were there. That's an absolute given. I think there's quite a few of us that would not be happy with a loss, but if we give them a good go, would take that as an improvement and as a bit of momentum for the rest of the league season as well. But there is also another part. Yes, the Six Nations are on and the top four team was playing during it, and Bordeaux basically lost their entire back line to France, but they're coming into this in pretty poor form. I think they've only won 3 out of 8, 9 games over the last couple of months when they've been playing consistently. They'll have some big players back, but they still lost at the weekend to Lyon. So they're stuttering a little bit as well, as we are. So, you know, they're not unbeatable.
No.
And so, we'll be going out there to win. Let's just do better than we did.
But also, I think that's possibly have a little bit of an impact on selection for the Northampton Saints game. You know, Ben Earl clearly needed a little bit of time off, although, you know, I mean, he's like the Duracell bunny, isn't he? I think he could go forever. You know, and he's up that age where you can go forever. Whether that has an impact on him later on in his career is a different matter. Marrow, they're obviously trying to get back. They didn't want to risk him, you know, after a little bit of a knee niggle and everything like that. But, you know, there are other players there who are, you know, have had a lot of work recently and come back in, which is why, you know, it's important that you've got like the likes of Billy Vunipolo. And I think, obviously, now with Juan Martin Gonzalez potentially having a concussion issue, he's not going to be available for selection. But, yeah, you know, you're going to go in that side with what was basically playing against Quinns. Maybe Marrow coming in, Andy Christie starting in on blind sides, Ben and Billy. It's a very, very good side. And as you say, a Bordeaux team that's not necessarily full of confidence. Shut the crowd up early doors.
Yep.
And get the crowds, as French crowds sometimes do, on the back of their players. And yeah, and give us a Quinns performance of accuracy and pace and intent. And yeah, we could easily win. And it wouldn't be a surprise if we did win. I think that's the way to look at it, isn't it?
It is. And then just, you know, got to chuck something out there as well. If we do manage to beat Bordeaux away, which would be fantastic, you'd then away against the winner of Quinns and Glasgow. And we'd look at both of them and say, we can have an away win there. And then all of a sudden you're in the semi-final.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot to play for here. I don't really just want to see this. I know I've said, let's just make sure we do better than we did last time, but I don't want to see it as let's have a spirited loss. I think, you know, there's still a very good chance of a trophy to play for should we get past Bordeaux. So, yeah, worth a punt, definitely.
Absolutely. Now, let's move on quickly before we play in your interview with Innes from Innes Murray from the Mavericks, and just discuss a great result for Ampthill versus Ealing Trailfinders on the weekend. A bonus point win featuring 10 of our Saracens' younger players, our fringe players, and wonderful result for them. It does kind of like put into perspective, though, the idea of promotion from the Championship to the Premiership, in so much as that if Ealing Trailfinders can go down to a bonus point loss to basically our youth team, you know, or our a lot of second string players with some first team experience, don't get me wrong, you know, they will struggle when they come up against teams with the likes of Maro Itoje in it and, you know, and Marcus Smith at Quinns or whoever it may be.
Yeah. I mean, so are Newcastle. So it's, you know, it's not such a bad thing. I mean, that is, yeah, I mean, it's an Ealing team that has got some big name players in it. Billy Trell, 12 Trees or one, is someone that's having a bit of a final swan song in his career. There's a couple of former Sarries players, the likes of Nathan Earl and Ruben Bird Tulloch, that are playing for Ealing as well. And it was, I think they were at relatively full strength against Ampthill. The difficult thing for Ealing is that although they've lost a couple of games this season, they've basically won the Championship already. Not mathematically, but they're going to. They know they're not going to get promoted. I think you can understand that if they've let their foot off the gas a little bit sometimes, and they'll get a bit of a rollicking, because I think they were 21-0 up, or 21-7, and Ampthill then came roaring back in the second half and won. So it's probably a mentality thing for Ealing in there as well. But yeah, just on the Ampthill team, yeah, 10 Saracens, young players. A couple of, I mean, Ollie Hartley was playing for Ampthill, has obviously played an awful lot of Premiership minutes this season as well. But it's definitely, keep your eye on what Ampthill are doing, because those of us that are concerned that we haven't made massive signings and we've got players leaving and things, I think we do need to be looking within the squad as well. And these are some of the players where a couple of seasons ago we were looking at our Prem Cup results and going, oh my word, this is awful. We're losing every game by 50 points. But a couple of years later, those same players are now playing in the Championship for Ampthill and beating the Championship leaders. You know, it's showing the progression that they're having. And there's a handful of those that I mean, Ollie Hartley, obviously, we're going to see plenty of next season. We know that anyway. But there's many more of them that were playing that game that I'm sure we're going to see an awful lot of next season. And they're really going to take a lot of value out of playing for Ampthill for a year.
Absolutely, absolutely. Just the last thought, the men's rugby, and I should have mentioned this earlier on and everything, and it's only a quick sentence, and you just have to say yes to this one and agree with me. But clearly, after the Northampton game, we're pinning our hopes on the wrong Smith if we think Marcus is the England number 10, because Finn Smith was absolutely superb for Saints, deserved man of the match, and really did show his quality.
Yeah, I mean, Marcus did have a fantastic game this weekend as well, but yeah, certainly Finn Smith, I do think, is the real future for England number 10.
Absolutely. Right. Let's have a break there, and then we'll play in your interview with Innes Marie Venter, a plug in the Mavericks at Wembley Arena, and then we'll have a chat with Six Nations afterwards.
You're listening to the Fezcast. Listening to the Fezcast.
You are listening to the Fezcast, which is proudly sponsored by the Saracen Supporters Association, and I'm Alison Davis, one of the SSA committee. For a £10 annual subscription, the SSA provides our members with monthly newsletters, virtual and in-person player events, away match ticket allocations, and we organise pre-match gatherings at away matches. We sponsor men's and women's players, and we support the Saracens Foundation Track Club on behalf of our members. On top of all that, every year we have a seasonal SSA badge, which is exclusive to members. Where else can you get that much value for a tenner? Join now at membermojo.co.uk/SSA or come and see us on match day in the Oasis at the Stonex.
This is the Fezcast.
Recording this on Saturday morning, and I've got Innes Marie Venter with us, who's been on the show probably four or five times now and keeps coming back, so we must be doing something right. How are you doing? You okay?
I am good, thanks. And yourself?
Excellent. Yeah, not too bad, not too bad. A bit disappointed after yesterday's loss in the rugby, but there's and the netball, actually, but we'll get to that in a minute. But hopefully a bit more to come today that's going to cheer us up. But it's been a little while since we spoke to you last. And I think, in between, there's been a home World Cup in South Africa for you to play in, which must have been pretty special. How was that for you?
Yeah, I don't think, we struggled to describe it, but it was just such a special occasion for us, especially as South Africans. For me, the most special part was just playing in front of a home crowd, but playing in front of my family and friends, having them there at a World Cup. Because always it's such a difficult thing to get tickets if you play away. But this time, it was just so easy for them to support us, and we're cheaper than traveling to Australia or England. So it was just special having, I literally had my mom there for every game, which was really special for me. So I think that's probably the best bit. We didn't get the results we wanted, but everybody was saying how well we did the World Cup and how special it was to beat South Africa. So, yeah.
It certainly looked very well put together from what I watched, and I did watch a fair bit of it as well. I'm still not doing very well at learning the rules and things, but I have got one technical question that I'm going to ask you a bit later on.
Okay.
Like an idiot. But first, obviously, back to the Mavericks for a fourth season, I believe. So we're obviously, again, doing something right to keep you coming back here. Is there anything in particular that keeps you at the Mavericks for so long?
Yeah, I think before I came to Mavs, I was jumping between two clubs in Australia, and something that I like and I really like value much is loyalty. And if you're hopping clubs, it's difficult to stay loyal at a club. Like, I've played for the same union, same club in South Africa for 5-6 years, and you can really see how you start building combinations and how you build a culture in that time where. And I hated jumping around from Vixens to Firebirds because I just couldn't be part of something bigger than just that 1 year. So obviously coming to Mavs, I was initially aiming just to stay the 3 years and then hopefully go back to Australia where there's a little bit more money and a little bit more competitiveness in terms of the games. But yeah, as the World Cup came closer, I just decided like I really enjoy my time here. I enjoy the little family that Saracens are creating and has created, even though the weather was obviously on the cons list, but and Tarantin came on board and she was like, listen, she wants to make this a winning culture just as we know Saracens is, and Yeah, and I was really excited to actually start building towards that as well. Obviously going, I'm like halfway through my career now, and you want to actually leave something behind when you leave the sport. And I was like, okay, this is obviously a good opportunity for me. Luckily, I didn't get any other offers than Saracens in terms of going back to Australia. But like I said, like God opens doors and he closes doors, and this is one door he's obviously keeping open. So I'm excited to stay with Saris. I'm really enjoying my time here, and yeah, probably if Saracens will keep me that long, we'll probably end my career here. So yeah.
That's amazing to hear that. And yeah, obviously we see you around in various capacities. I've seen you at plenty of rugby matches as well. So you're obviously taking to the Saracens family as a whole, which is brilliant.
But
I mean, during those 4 years, obviously you mentioned the family that's being built, and we did chat briefly off air. There's been a little bit of turnover in the squad over the last probably 2 years or so, I guess, and obviously new head coaches as well. We spoke to Ellie Ratu at the start of the season, and she was praising as well, even though she'd only really been in the side for about 2 weeks when we spoke to her. She was really happy about the togetherness that was building in the squad. Is that something that is really part of the culture there?
Yeah, in my first and second season, things really started falling apart for us as a team and as a culture and just the whole setup. So obviously when Tamsin and the whole Saracens came on board, they were like, listen, this is not good enough. We need to start making something of this. And I think they just broke it down to the foundations of what we are as Mavericks and started building up. And Tamsin has been really set on, building some great, traditions, cultures, just a good setup and putting in people that can actually produce the results that we want and the performances we want. Obviously, it takes time for combinations to start, but I think we're on the right track. We have people in places and positions that we want, especially in the team. And obviously, it's all growing pains. So obviously, we're going to have some tough losses, but obviously, we have to start building on the bigger picture and the long-term picture. So, exciting things lie ahead, I'm sure.
Being over 6 foot, I suppose you know a lot about growing pains as well.
Yeah, definitely. 100%. I've felt it for a very long time.
Yeah, fair play. Speaking of results, we do have to talk about those. We're 7 matches into the season now, and it's pretty much a 50-50 set of results. 3 wins, 3 losses and a draw in the middle of that, and sitting, as of today, I think in 5th in the table, but could potentially be 6th by the end of the weekend. But It's a mixed bag, but there's been improvements from a heavy defeat to Loughborough onwards, I guess.
Yeah, obviously you want to win as much as possible. We started off shaky with a draw. we were really hoping to win that match, and it was actually one of the games we should have won. But obviously after the Loughborough loss, that was a big hit. You had 20 points on the scoreboard difference. We had to reset, like we had to come together, say, listen, what's working, what's not working, and how do we want to actually go into the season? It's early days, it's only game 4. I can't believe it's game 7 already. It was only game 4, so there is time to reset and rebuild stuff. If you do it earlier instead of waiting until the middle of the season to do it. Hence why the Bath game and the Sirens game, we were really focusing on executing our structures, and obviously we knew the Stars game is going to be an even matched game. We really wanted this win, but there's a lot of positives to take from this. We really stayed in, and we in the third, fourth quarter, we usually drop a bit. To stay in this game for like within 2 points is really good for us. Obviously, a win would have been perfect and the cherry on top, but we can't really dwell on that too long. We have the Wembley game coming up next weekend, which is the 7th of April, which is a great game, and it will be against Manchester Thunder. So obviously we can't dwell on the little things that didn't go away. We need to like focus on that game coming forward.
Absolutely, and perfectly mentioning the match at Wembley coming up at the weekend against Manchester Thunder, who are flying in the table, I think, at the moment. They could be.
Yeah.
Second, I think, in the table.
Yeah.
Tough match coming up.
Yeah, it's always tough. I mean, Manchester Thunder, they are so well put together, so structured, and Yeah, I think they've kept most of their team very much the same. And I think, yeah, those players just slotting the players coming in. So, yeah, it's the same kind of team, same structures, obviously different, a little bit of different players. But, yeah, they're tough. They're really good competitors. They really execute their game really well. We'll obviously have to go and see where we can break down at their structures. And yeah, we can have some wins because that would be a really great win to have, especially since they are top of the log.
That's fair. And I mean, we've heard plenty that the crowd at HSV, the support that you get, regardless of the result, is pretty good. But the size of the crowd at, I think I have to call it the OVO Arena, don't I? At Wembley Arena, you could potentially add a zero onto the end of the usual home crowd. What, you know, have you played in front of a crowd that big? I suspect you might have done back at home and in Australia, but what sort of a difference does that make in increasing the crowd size like that?
It is obviously smaller arena at HSV or smaller venue. I think the capacity is 1,000 if we have a big sellout crowd. And you can, it's actually pretty loud. So imagine that times three. it's an amazing feeling. I've played in front of 10,000 capacity in Australia, and that's a club game. So yeah, it is possible to have those multitude of people coming to watch. Like we've played in Melbourne Arena, I think, I can't remember what the name is now, but which is a pretty big arena as well. And that was my home game at Vixen. And that, I think, is a 10,000 capacity. I might be wrong. So it's great. And internationally, I've played in front of big crowds. World Cup was 5,000 capacity. So it really makes a difference. We have a very loud South African crowd. So we, like, even the other countries were like, this is a loud crowd. So I'm really, really excited to play at Wembley, to have hopefully a 3,000 capacity or 3,000, yeah, spectators there. I mean, it's going to be incredible. I was there when we played with England at the Quad Series. And yeah, it's an incredible atmosphere. So I'm really excited to see our fans in, yeah, the masses coming to that game.
Yeah, I must admit, I have been to HSV a couple of times when it's almost sold out, and I think the fact that you've got an enclosed room and some very, very excitable people, it can get very, very loud. So yeah, hopefully,
yeah,
3,000 at the arena would be even bigger. Just for yourself, we have discussed off air that there's an injury niggling away here and there, but we won't dwell on that too much. What is your goal for the rest of the season personally? Obviously, we talk about team goals all the time, and the idea is to keep improving, win as much, hopefully get into the top four, etc. But being selfish, what do you want to achieve in the next few months?
Well, first, I came into the season just rebuilding my foundations. I didn't have the best of World Cups. I started off very strong with the first game in the World Cup, but I started fizzling, if I can say it like that, out during the end. And yeah, I'm working closely with a sports psychologist or performance psychologist, whatever you want to call them. And I was like, listen, I have a 4-year plan. The next World Cup is obviously what you're working towards. And I have 4 years to start rebuilding a little bit of myself and start improving things that I need to improve on. So that was my personal goal going into the season, is start chipping away at those things long-term. So I'm really working on the basics at this moment, but obviously incorporating what the team needs and what the team wants from me as well, and what we need to do as a team. So, obviously when Cam asked me in the beginning, okay, so what is your goal for this team in the season, I was like, I want to win. Obviously it's a big stretch, but yeah, I was like, oh, I'd rather aim high and fall a little bit short and still do well than aim too low and then just, yeah, not be happy with that. So I was like, I want to win the season. So obviously that will be the ideal, but I think the first step is just to get into the top four, which we've been struggling to do in the past 3 years. So if we get to there, we're almost a step closer to, yeah, winning this. So I think that's the thing, getting out of this damn fifth position that we've been ending in the past 3-4 years. So, yeah, I think that will be the aim first, is to get into that top four, to get into semis, and that will take us a step closer to what we really want.
Yeah, I think we know from, any team really, but certainly all the teams at Saracens, you almost, once you finally break that little barrier, everything then does sort of flood in from there, hopefully. So, yeah, fingers crossed, top four this season. Right, I have a moderately technical but very simple question to help with knowledge of... before we started this, I was just looking at the numbers, looking at the stats on the NSL website, just to see who's doing well, who's doing what. Georgia Lees is at the top of the charts for feed. I did have to look up and find out what a feed was, I will admit. it was exactly what I thought, feeding the ball into you in the shooting circle.
Yeah, okay. Obviously.
Georgia being top of that list, does that mean that she is exceptionally good at feeding the ball into you? Or does it mean that things are a little bit one-dimensional and there aren't as many other players around who offer that outlet into the shooting circle?
Yeah, I think Georgia has been around us for quite a while. I've played with Georgia since the start of my Mavericks journey. So obviously she knows the players in the circle, and obviously, courtesy to her, she has a great eye feeding into the circle, and she's not scared to do it. She has a lot of experience in that regard, and obviously she's played with us for quite a while, so we have that connection. And where I think with the other ones, like Ellie coming in, India coming in, I've been out for the most of preseason, so we haven't had that time obviously to build that. And and yeah, it is obviously a wing attack's job to do that. So she is great at doing it, but also the combinations we've built over the years is obviously helping with that. And obviously, successful feed is that. So obviously the shooters are doing their job at helping her at that set. But she is exceptional, and she has an exceptional eye for finding the space in the circle.
That's good to get in there as well, that it is the successful feat. So it is partly to do with you as well. And
yeah.
Well, that's good. Look, I've probably embarrassed myself slightly for any Mavericks fans that are listening, but that is why I'm here. We've got plenty of rugby fans who don't know what they're talking about either. So step by step, we are building those links between the... Anyway, I know you've got to get you off to Ealing for some international rugby. Playing against the South African team, which should be pretty exciting, actually, with those guys there, and Lottie Clapp playing for the USA as well. But before you go, is there anything that you would like to speak to us about on the Fezcast before you disappear? Floor's yours.
Well, the only thing to talk about is the headliner, is the Wembley fixture. I think we really want to get 3,000 capacity. Obviously, if we can get even more, that will be great. But we're really pushing for that, and we're really hoping fans support us in that. So obviously to boost some ticket sales, but obviously having all our family and friends and rugby boys and rugby supporters, please come and support the rugby, not the rugby girls, obviously the rugby women, but the Naples girls as well. It's going to be excited. We as players are extremely excited to play at Wembley. I think it's something we've looked forward to for most of the season now and pre-season. So if we can make this a success, it can start being a more regular thing in the coming seasons. So, come support us at Wembley.
Absolutely. I mean, if you were at the showdown for the rugby, you know what a good occasion Saracens and the Mavericks can put on a one-off special. So if you're going to make it to a netball match this year, please make it the one in Wembley this weekend on Sunday the 7th. 4 o'clock start, plenty going on around the day.
Awesome, thanks.
But yeah, Inamari, thank you very much for joining us this morning. Wish you all the best again, and looking forward to another appearance on the Fezcast from you, because we just can't keep doing
it. Well, if I'm going to be here a while, it'll probably be a lot more.
You'll have to start hosting it soon. I think it's...
Oh, no, never. I think my English ran out. I'll just start speaking Afrikaans.
That's fine, build a new audience.
Great.
Thank you, and enjoy the rugby this afternoon as well.
Oh, thank you.
Hi, this is Petrus Duplessis, and you are listening to the Fezcast.
This is the Fezcast.
Oh, yeah. Thanks to Innes Marie for joining Matt there for that interview. You always enjoy talking to Innes Marie, don't you, Matt? And
yeah, always good. Caught up a couple of times, actually. She's been at the some of the women's rugby fixtures as well. So we didn't talk about it there, but she's had a pretty niggly injury for quite a while. So it's good to see her getting a good run of fixtures in. And yeah, plugging their big occasion at Wembley Arena, the Ovo Arena, we're supposed to call it. So maybe that'll be a little bit easier.
But. Don't worry, Matt. I don't think you're ever going to get the opportunity to walk out on stage and shout, "Hello, Wembley!"
I think it's very unlikely, yeah.
Right, well, talking about great performances. First things first, me and Joe mentioned it. Obviously, John Mitchell listens to the Fezcast. Well, someone pointed him in our direction because he made, for me, a couple of, you know, interesting or, you know, some selection on the back of the game against Italy, where Emily Scarrett, and, you know, I feel sorry for Emily because, you know, she's come back in not match fit and didn't have a great game against Italy, and she paid the price. But bringing in Jones and Hilda, Herder, centre for England, at Bristol, what a professional performance those guys put in and really put Wales to the sword in a big way.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, for all we can talk about England, the professionalism being a country mile ahead of other nations, I think we saw a little bit, certainly towards the end of Simon Middleton's tenure as England coach, he sort of recognised that England had slightly boxed themselves into a corner a little bit, quite literally, because their game plan was to earn a penalty, kick to the corner, maul it over the line, start again. And when that wasn't working, they sort of struggled to do anything else. Whereas I think we can see straight away from John Mitchell, who's trying to play a very different style of rugby, but also do something that you're quite big on, and making sure that there's a plan B and a plan C that people can switch to if something's not working. And yeah, the dynamism from the backs in this weekend's fixture was absolutely fantastic. But at the same time, it was still built off a lot of fantastic forward work, particularly in the line-out, and the disruption that player of the match, Rosie Gallagher, put in as well. But yeah, it was a good performance. We want to see Wales, Scotland, Ireland, whoever, come up a bit more than they are. But yeah, for the time being, that's what England have got to do leading up to the World Cup.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Rosie there. I mean, she had a phenomenal game, and not just in the line-out. Her defensive work, her tackling was immense. She made yards with ball in hand, you know, and she's kept Abby Ward out there. You know, she's who had a great game the week before, I thought was one of the better England players in a not necessarily great performance. She's come in and really did a good job. I think also Alex Matthews coming in at 8 made a huge difference to the dynamism and the go forward from that that pack. Interestingly, is Marley Packer, an inspirational leader, captain, but she's first two games of this tournament, she's been subbed out at 65 minutes. It's an interesting thing to do there. And you know, is that Marley's role now is to go and blow for 65 minutes and then, you know, bring some fresh legs on for her. I mean, she'll be the last to admit it, but I mean, she's not as young as she was.
Well, to be honest, when we...
And I wouldn't say that to her face either.
No, to be honest, I think you're absolutely fine, because early on in the season for Saracens, she was on the bench to start. That's a terrible way of yeah. In that sense, and she was on the bench again, I think Loughborough it was, and she only came on with 25 minutes to go, and Joe and I asked her you know, what the tactics, the plan was, and we can't repeat on the podcast what she actually said, but it was along the lines of, that is what I have the energy to do right now. So right. Marley herself is recognizing that she's not 23, but she still has a hell of a lot to offer for whatever she can get in. And she has played for Saracens on off the bench. And so, yeah, no surprise really to see it for England as well. And I think you would rather have 60, 65 minutes of 100% Marley Packer than 80 minutes running into the ground and not getting the best out of her. So, yeah, I think that's fair enough.
Absolutely. Now, I do have to mention the referee. For two reasons. One was a comedy moment at the start, because and this is a reference that only people of probably my age, you know, late 40s, early 50s might get, and a bit older. But they came on and they announced who the referee was, and it was and referee, and it's Pat Roach. And I turned around to the bloke behind me and I said, I'm hoping not Bomber. So those of you who remember off Ada Zane Pett and Pat Roach, Pat Bomber Roach, who was also a wrestler from the 80s, would get that reference, you know. And actually, halfway through the first half, I turned around to the bloke behind and said, actually, I wanted Bomber Roach refereeing it, because I was kind of like wondering, was she at the races with it refereeing? There was a few weird decisions made there, but yeah, one of those, isn't it? I think there was a point where she actually tried allowing Wales a bit more leniency because they were, you know, not competing well enough. So, you know, it was a point where England had to be hyper accurate to get anything, and Wales were allowed a little bit of leniency in places, because otherwise, you know, they would have been blown away from the park. But yeah,
I think so. I mean, fortunately, everyone has slightly misheard it and it was Cat Roach, but yeah, I'll take your point.
Yeah, so, well, yeah, there you go. So, well, apologies to her for that. But the other thing I wanted to say before we finish this up is that's my first time being to Bristol to watch rugby. I've been there to watch football a few times, having lived down in Bristol. But when I was living in Bristol, the Bristol Rugby were playing over at the Gasheads ground. So going there, and it was absolutely brilliantly organised. It's a fantastic ground for a start. Steve Lansdowne's done a great job there. My old Skittles, I've played Skittles with him a few times back in the day. But right from the point of booking your ticket, booking your park and ride ticket in, we came in from Portway in. The buses were organised brilliantly coming out. The buses were organised fantastic. The ground itself, fantastic. And what was amazing was, you know, I've been to women's games at the Stonex, Saracens games. It's my first international. The atmosphere was fabulous. The kids around, I mean, young kids, teenage kids singing along Wannabe by the Spice Girls, which is a song I'm not particularly I like, but the enthusiasm of them all, it was just it's what rugby was many years ago before the corporate prawn sandwich brigade took over and made it too expensive to go to men's rugby at Twickenham or whatever. It was just an absolutely lovely experience. The only issue that Sharon will tell you, my wife will tell you, there weren't enough ladies to lose. So, you know, that was the one negative. But what a great experience from A to Z, start to finish, it was at Bristol. And honestly, you know, if you get the chance to go to England international games or any international women's games, do it, because it's just a fantastic, fantastic experience. And it invigorated my love of watching rugby again.
There's not really much I can say to that. Can't argue with you. It certainly looked a good, good atmosphere and things on the on the telly from where I was watching. And yeah, it is nice that, you know, something we've talked about for the men's game a little bit, taking things away from Twickenham occasionally. But it does just show that taking it around the country a little bit does add a certain extra atmosphere. And also, obviously, the attendance is still pretty damn good. You know, it's the best attendance ever of a women's international outside of Twickenham. So can't argue with it, really.
It must have been good, because I even got involved in Mexican waves.
Oh, I
hate Mexican waves, but I got taken up in the whole experience and the whole atmosphere. It was fantastic. So, yeah, well done to England RFU on that one. I mean, they are people who do come in for a little bit of abuse and criticism, but when they get it right, you've got to pay tribute to it, and they got it right on that one. So, yeah, a great end to a great rugby weekend. Obviously, chatting to you, Matt, just puts the cherry on top of the icing on the cake, doesn't it? But and talking to everybody who's listening in. So I'd like to say thanks to Innes Marie Venter for joining Matt to chat about the big game this weekend. And get yourself along online and find tickets to that if you can get yourself to Wembley. And yeah, thanks, Matt, for your time talking about Saints and the Six Nations. And we'll say thank you, everybody, for listening in. And we'll be back on the 10th of April with another Fizzcast following the Bordeaux Beglers game.
Ooh la la.
Oh, yeah. Zut alors, sacre bleu, and all of that. Thanks, everybody. Ta-ra.
Cheers up.
is the Fezcast.